Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes. I want to apologize right at the beginning for my voice, which is a shadow of its normal self, but I guess that's just a reminder to me that this show is not about me. It's about the veterans that we bring in each and every week, the men and women whose service and sacrifice throughout the years have kept our country free. We've been focusing primarily on World War II, and with this week bringing us Pearl Harbor Day on Friday, that will be the 66th anniversary of the attacks on Pearl Harbor, and a little later on I'll tell you where you can go to observe that date and observe the veterans, pay tribute to the veterans who are still remaining from that Sunday morning at Pearl Harbor in 1941. Today we visit with a Pearl Harbor veteran and his wife. Chuck and Dorothy Lishman are here from Coarse Gold. Thanks for driving down. It's a pleasure to have both of you here. And I wanted to have Dorothy here, Chuck, because from what I understand, she's the talker in the family.
That's right.
We won't make you too nervous, Dorothy. Before we bring Dorothy in, though, Chuck, I want to talk to you a little bit about how you got involved in the service, because you were in the Navy long before Pearl Harbor. In fact, technically, you were done with the Navy before the attacks even happened at Pearl Harbor, if they had kept their word on the date you were supposed to get out.
That's correct.
But you grew up in Long Beach, and you decided to join the Naval Reserve when you were still in high school?
That's right. I went out to the Long Beach Airport. One of the fellows there at in my class said that he had a lot of fun going out there to the airport at the Navy base there in Long Beach, and he said they fly out and they just have a lot of fun. So I thought, well, I'll join the Navy Air Force. So I went out there and signed up in Long Beach, and we used to go out and, well, we packed parachutes, which I didn't have to use, and and then we did some dive bombing, and we used to shoot at those sleeves, and it was a lot of fun. We had the Grumman's SF-1s and SF-2s and the old N-3N planers.
And I understand in those dive bombers at that time, you guys pulled quite a few Gs.
Yeah, I don't know how many Gs, but like I said, it was a lot of G-whiz, you know. Yeah, it was pretty tight. You couldn't lift your foot up off of the plain floor there, that's for sure.
And you had a high school sweetheart, and her name was Dorothy. And I imagine, Dorothy, that once you saw this strapping young gentleman in that Naval Reserve uniform, that just sent it through the roof, right?
I had my first date with Chuck when I was 13, and now my grandchildren say, "Mother, did your mother let you date at 13?
And what's the answer?
Well, I did it.
Whether she let you or not.
I'm not sure she always knew, but anyway, yes, we've known each other a long time.
And in 1941, you had plans to be married, Chuck. I know you were going to wait till your 21st birthday in September of the following year to get married. But it didn't work out that way, right? Or no, it was September of 41 that you were going to.
Yes, that's correct.
But the Navy said in April of 1941, we need you. We need you, period. It's not the reserves anymore. You're on active duty.
Right. Well, I was in the Merchant Marine, too, at that time. And we sailed on tankers, and we'd been up to Alaska and met Father Hubbard, the Glacier Priest, and went to the whaling station in Akatan there in the islands. And anyway, they called me in, and I didn't go because I had been in the reserve. We attended reserve. We went out every other weekend and then 2 weeks in the summer. And so they called me in to go into active service, and I turned them down at that time. But later on, the war got pretty bad there with England and France. And so anyway, what happened? Dorothy's poking me.
She never does that. But as it got closer and closer to what we know now as the U.S. entering the war, of course you didn't know that then, but there started to be a buildup, and they decided, you know what, we're putting you on the USS Perry, a destroyer minesweeper, and we're going to send you out to Pearl Harbor. But you said, wait a second, I've got to get married first. So what did you do about that?
Well, I was down in North Island. That's where they sent me down there. And I wanted to go back to sea anyway, but it was a little scary when everything was going so fast. And anyway, I signed up and went on the Perry, the destroyer. And at that time, it was a destroyer. And it was a high-speed, they switched us over to a high-speed minesweeper because somebody decided in the Navy that they needed sweepers before they could make any attempt at getting any place, and the Japanese were moving with everything, and if we ever got into the islands, they couldn't get the fleet in.
And those minesweepers would perform an important function, but you had this important situation, too. You wanted to get married, and here's Dorothy. You want to marry her before you go off to what you think is going to be a war. How much time did they give you to get married? You realize you're going to have to do it on your own, right? Maybe Dorothy wants to pick up the story from there. Were you the one pushing the buttons on this?
No, I didn't know anything about it, but they gave him 3 days, and we didn't have time to get our blood tests and get a license in California, so he borrowed a friend's car, drove the 100 miles from San Diego up to Long Beach, picked me up, and we headed for Las Vegas. We got there at midnight, stopped at a gas station and asked the fellow where we got a license, and he called the county clerk for us. She came down this big marble steps and all, and she went ahead of us turning on the lights, made out our license for us, asked us if we wanted to be married by a minister or what, and we said we'd prefer a minister. So she said Reverend Melton is always very nice about getting up at night. So she called him, gave us his address. We went out, rang the doorbell. He came to the door, and he said, well, where are your witnesses? Well, duh. I mean, we didn't think of witnesses. So he said, well, his wife would get up. And literally, he said this. The woman next door was always very nice about getting up for a couple of dollars. So that's what we gave her. But they both had on their robes, and his wife had a cold, and she stood and sniffed. And for some awful reason, I got the giggles. So Chuck said that I giggled all the way our wedding ceremony. That's what he always says. But we've often thought we should go back and tell Reverend Melton that actually the marriage did stick, because I'm sure he was questioning it that night. We got married, headed back over the back road through Yosemite, had problems with Chuck's friend's car, got back to Long Beach. He again literally dumped me out with my things in my mother's backyard, drove across town, put on his Navy uniform, beat the 100 miles back to San Diego.
And I have a feeling that was a pretty close call when you got there too. Yeah, I guess you could have told the Reverend that it worked out all right. 66 years later, despite those beginnings, the marriage is going strong. And Chuck, how close were you to not making it back to the Perry in time to leave for Honolulu?
Oh, man, I got back down to San Diego. I almost burned up Neil's car trying to get back. And I got back to the dock and said, I got to get back to the Perry. It's pulling out at midnight. My liberty is up. And I have to get back. I said, or I'm over the hill. So he says, well, we can't go now. He says, I have all these other fellows to take back to their ships, and they have the priority. And I said, no. I said, I've got to go back. Well, he asked the fellows on the boat, anybody have to get back to their ship now or anything? And they, of course, they were all out of it anyway. And they said, nah. So anyway, they got back on that darn boat, and off we went to the Perry. When I got back to the Perry, the guy up there on the gangway says, I didn't think he was going to make it. And I said, I didn't either. And so they lifted up the gangway, and the ship got underway, and we went off to Long Beach and picked up the Arizona, which, of course, was sunk in Pearl Harbor, and went off to Honolulu to a new, that was their new battleship port. The battleships were stationed in Long Beach. And I know when I was a kid, they used to practice there, and they'd shake that Long Beach up when they'd shoot those big 12 and 16-inch guns.
I imagine that would
be thunderous. So anyway, I got back to Pearl, and that was the liberty that we had, and my enlistment was up December 3rd of 1941. We were going to get married in September, but due to my age limit and California requiring 3 days to get license, why,
you had to roll with it.
So anyway, my Dorothy's punching me again.
Oh, that's all right. Well, as crazy as that was, and obviously you were the last man aboard the Perry to take off to get to Honolulu. They raised it up, and you took off right then. But as wild of an adventure that was, in a borrowed car to Las Vegas and back in 3 days to make it on your ship, I know that what happened on December 7th was even more indelible in your memory. And we're going to get to when we continue this edition of Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Of course, this Friday, we will mark the 66th anniversary of those attacks. That was, of course, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt on December 8th, 1941, informing the American public and Congress about what had happened the day before. One man who didn't need to hear that to know what happened is Chuck Lishman. He is with us. Chuck and his wife, Dorothy, are here this week. And Chuck, when we left things before the commercial break there, we were talking about how you got on the Perry and you left Long Beach escorting the Nevada, the Oklahoma, and the Arizona out to Pearl Harbor. We know what happened to two of those three ships in the attacks on December 7th. You, though, before that ever happened, you're expecting to go home to your new bride, Dorothy. Your enlistment was actually up when?
December 8th, 1941.
Well, it expired December 3rd, and you were going to...
But the ship was pulling out the 8th. Yeah, mm-hmm. My enlistment was up December 3rd of 1941. We were leaving for the States December 8th, and I would have had my time up unless the Navy helped me in, but that's...
So the day before, you were supposed to go back to the States and reunite with your lovely bride. You wake up on a Sunday morning aboard the USS Perry, and what's the first thing you remember seeing and hearing?
Well, I just got through eating. We slept after quarters in the after part of the ship, and I just had come up topside and was standing there, and one of the fellows from the fire room, he came up, and we were both standing there talking, and we looked up and out over Ford Island, and here come some planes, and we thought, man, look at those planes. They're really doing the same maneuvers. And I says, no. He says, they're it's crazy.
So you thought it was American planes practicing for an attack?
Yeah, we saw them drop something, and they usually drop sacks of flour or something, you know. And the next thing I knew, I looked over there, and here over on Ford Island, the planes were getting blown up, and everything was going up. They were bombing everything, of course, to keep the planes from taking off, but we didn't know that. But then when I couldn't believe it, I said, this must be maneuvers, the craziest maneuvers I've ever seen in my life. And he says, no. He said, look. And boy, one of those Jap planes flew over the top of us and saw that big red ball, and I yelled down in the after deck house there and said, hey, no liberty today. The Japs are here. And that's when the war started.
The war was indeed started for the Americans that day. As far as what the Perry did at that time, and I imagine it was a mad scramble and just chaos for the duration of that day. But as far as what the Perry did and what you did from that point on, give us a picture of what that was like for you.
Well, it was such a surprise. Everybody was standing around looking at it. It looked like just maneuvers until everything started going haywire. And then, of course, everybody started running for guns or something. So all we had was 4-inch guns, broadside, and some 30s and 50s. Well, everybody was breaking the locks on the ready lockers and everything and getting shells out of the hole. And that's the magazine. And that's where we started, right there. And, well, first, when we got the guns going, of course, we were shooting down. We got credit, I think, for one plane and a hole through one of the submarines that was in the harbor right off of our stern. And the Donahoe came in and dropped the depth charges and liked to blew us out of the water. But anyway, we should have had credit with a 4-inch shell through the coating tower and one plane. But there was four ships in the pack here with the Perry. And we were all shooting, and I think they had four or five planes they got down, but I think we got credit for one of them. And
And you personally at this time, you're grabbing these 4-inch shells and hauling them to the gun? What was going through your mind?
Grabbed the shells. Well, you had to do something, and there wasn't anything there but those big old 4-inch shells coming up there, and you can't hardly load one to get it in the gun. And I had one under each arm. And, man, it got strafed, and the bullets were ricocheting off of the deck, and I dove behind the stack. Next thing I do, I look down and had these two big old 4-inch shells, one under each arm, and, man, I thought, what am I doing with these suckers here? it was a little hairy at that time, yeah.
I'm often curious about this when I talk to Pearl Harbor veterans as far as what it felt like, the duration of it, because... You know, if you were to watch it real time, it seems like it would go by very fast, but I imagine that if you're there and you're moving around and you're trying to get the shells to the gun and you're seeing fire coming in and you're hearing explosions left and right, did it seem like it lasted forever? What did that feel like?
Well, to tell you the truth, I thought it was all over. I mean, I thought we were gone. I mean, we thought we were going to get blown out of the water and we all wind up dead. And it nobody really got scared. It happened so fast and everything. Nobody was really upset or scared. And, of course, after that was all over, when we got underway and went around to Nevada going out of the channel, and I wondered what we were doing, and they sent me up in the crow's nest for a lookout. I don't know what I was supposed to look out for, but I was out looking anyway. We went around the stern of the Nevada. She was crosswise in the channel, and she'd been sunk there. And I couldn't believe we were going out. And I said, where are we going out to fight the Japs? No, that's a joker. They sunk all our battleships, knocked the cruisers out, and blew up everything else. And we were going out with a couple of 4-inch guns and going to clean up the Japs. Well, it didn't work out that way anyway, but we went out. But then when we came back in, that's when it really hit me. Man, the battleships were burning and planes are all burning. The Ford Island was up in smoke. And, it was terrible, and the guys were floating around in that oil and burning, and you can't believe it. It's almost too difficult to even mention this stuff. But then they had an old boat there that they'd rigged up, and it was called Juicy Lucy, and they were going around scooping up the bodies and oil and stuff and like that. Boy, I could tell Paul, if anybody ever wanted to cry, that was the time.
Have you ever seen anything since then in your life, 66 years on Friday since that day? Any images, video, descriptions, anything that compares to the devastation and destruction that you saw that day?
No, because you can't get the whole picture. When you're there with it and everything's going up, you get a center picture, and they can write about it, and they can photograph it and everything, but you're just coring a sample out of the picture that you see. And your feelings, you have no way to put your feelings into a picture or a radio or anything else. It's a bad scene.
I know that you've been involved in Pearl Harbor Survivors Associations for a long time, and you're involved in the local Chapter 8 here in the Valley, which, by the way, if any of you would like to go see some of the veterans who were there that day, thank them for their service and pay tribute to those who are no longer here, Friday morning, it'll be December 7th, of course, Friday morning at 9:30 at the Fresno VA Hospital's auditorium. It's the auditorium which is just east of the actual main entrance to the VA Medical Center in Fresno, and that of course is on Clinton in Fresno. At 9:30 Friday morning, there will be a ceremony. It'll actually begin a few minutes after that to try to coincide with the exact time of the attacks 66 years ago. But you'll see Chuck and some other Pearl Harbor veterans there, and it's a very touching and moving ceremony. At least it was last year. I very much enjoyed and appreciated it, and I think you would too. But Chuck, as far as being involved with other survivors of Pearl Harbor, what has that done for you over the years? Is it therapeutic for you to talk to some of these other guys and realize that they saw the same things you saw? And I imagine too, maybe there have been situations where you've learned something or you've been able to put another piece to a puzzle that you had in your mind about what happened that day.
Well, yeah, well, you can't believe it. Everybody has a different picture, and sometimes we see different things, even looking at the same picture. If we see a Oh, like the plane's coming in. They get a different angle. One guy says, well, I saw him come in and he dropped a bomb. The other guy says, no, he was strafing. So down at the Pearl Harbor meetings, why we get together and we do adjust. So I thought it was a Monahan that dropped the depth charges there on the sub in the harbor there at Pearl City. Well, it was McDonough. And so it's what you have to pick up on. But anyway, we get the stories together and we all see the same thing pretty much. On the big ships, they don't have that close contact like you do on a small ship. On a small ship, everybody knows everybody, knows their jobs, know whether they're shuffling off or not. On a big ship, they have canteens and bread, and they have everything. And on a small ship like ours, we had nothing. We were lucky to have coffee. And I could go into that too, but I'm not going to go into that.
Well, one thing I do want to get to in a little bit is the close call that is the reason that you're here with us today to share your story. We'll get to that in a bit. But I do want to ask Dorothy, first of all, as we talk about the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association, and, you know, there are some Pearl Harbor survivors out there that aren't a member of that and I think might benefit from joining a group like that. But over the years, Dorothy, as you see Chuck get together with these other men who were there that day on December 7th, what's been the most meaningful thing for you to see? Do you see a different side of Chuck come out when he's around these other guys?
Well, no, I pretty much know Chuck, but I do think that it's interesting to be there and hear all the different stories. And a lot of the women whose husbands have passed away still go and take part as, they call them the Pearl Harbor Sweethearts. And we have volunteer members, too, who are a big help. We have the Secretary Treasurer and the... No, I can't even know. Anyway, they are history teachers, and they do help a lot because all of the fellows are in their 80s now, and quite a few of the chapters are closing. They just get to the point where there isn't anyone left, and they are closing down. So we're fortunate that Fresno still has, I think last time we had 8 survivors along with wives and sweethearts. But yes, it's just a great time to get together. And Chuck knows one instance of Joe Ruggles when he'd been telling me this story for a long time. Some of it's kind of hard to believe, but Joe confirmed his story. And
Joe's another local Pearl Harbor survivor who I believe is 95 now and still kicking. Chuck, he was on the Saratoga, I know Joe was, and I think this has to do with a torpedo that no one would believe the story that had been told.
Well, see, we were on a destroyer, and of course a destroyer minesweeper, and those old four-pipers were expendable. That's what they were. It's just an expendable ship. Well, we were escorting the Saratoga into Pearl, and one of the Japanese submarines shot a torpedo, and it went, and we were supposed to take it because that's what we were, expendable, to keep it from hitting the carrier. Well, we went over there, and the captain said, oh, unnecessary personnel topside. I was pretty unnecessary. But anyway, I stood there on the deck watching that wake come right into the Saratoga, and it went right underneath us. I didn't know it, but I saw it coming, and I...
You were bracing for the explosion, huh?
Yeah, and I closed my eyes waiting for it to happen, and the darn thing came out the other side, and I thought, wow. And anyway, I went over and hit the Saratoga and knocked out 3 fire rooms, and slowed her down 7/10 of a knot, and she still went into Pearl at 34 knots. So, I mean, I'm sorry that we didn't get the torpedo in one way, but on the other hand, so be it.
Well, we're glad you're here to tell the story. And you told that story, and no one would believe you that the torpedo had gone underneath you? That just sounded so crazy.
Oh, most of us guys, you know, in 80 and 90 years old, most of them are all gone. And so anybody you tell now, they have a hard time believing some of these stories, but they are true. And Joe Ruggles, down there in the Pearl Harbor meeting, he says, I was on the Saratoga, and I remember that. So he confirmed it. Well, that gave Dorothy an out.
And it gave you some vindication after all the years, and we're very glad about that. Before we get to our next commercial, Chuck, and I want to get to the rest of your experiences aboard the Perry when we come back, but just for now, as we do talk about Pearl Harbor, we talk about the ceremony that'll be coming up on Friday. Why is it important for you as a Pearl Harbor survivor to remember December 7th and to let future generations know what happened that day. Why is that such an important thing to you?
Oh, man, we have to be prepared. We were so sucked in on this war. Nobody even had any idea. Well, it said they didn't anyway, and I'll leave that up to somebody else. But I didn't know it, and I don't think anybody else did there at the fleet there in Pearl Harbor. They were all standing around and breakfast and getting ready for liberty and everything else. And when this was such a surprise, this United States should never let that happen again. Never, never. Go into war, it's bad. It's not good at all. There's too many people dying, too many innocent people get killed for nothing. But let's protect our own shores and be alert.
That is the message of the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association. When we come back, you'll hear why Chuck is here with us today and how he did not suffer the same fate that so many of his shipmates on the USS Perry did. You're listening to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Lattler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to the program. We're joined today by Chuck and Dorothy Lishman, who make their home in Coarse Gold, where Chuck, just like he had those 4-inch shells under his arms on December 7th, 1941, now he carries around logs that he splits up there. That's how he keeps so young. Are the logs as heavy as those 4-inch shells?
No.
Depends on how much you split them, I suppose.
At 87, you don't pick up too much.
Well, we've picked up a good chunk of your story. We heard about how you had to race off to Las Vegas and get back in 3 days in order to make it to your ship so you could marry your high school sweetheart, Dorothy. And despite those unorthodox circumstance, 66 years later, here you are still wearing those rings and still together. And you'll celebrate the 66th anniversary of December 7th, 1941 on Friday. But after that day, you still had the rest of the war to fight, Chuck. And I know here you are, a guy who's expecting to get out of the Navy before Pearl Harbor even happens. They say, you're in it for a while now, buddy. And you go off with the USS Perry all over the place. I know you had a lot of interesting experiences, but one thing that we don't hear about too much, unless maybe you're talking about the Bataan Death March and how those soldiers were cut off with their supplies, but supplies were a big issue in the military during World War II, and there were times when ships or battalions or what have you didn't have the supplies they needed, and I understand that you on the Perry ran into that at some point.
Yes, when we were up in the Aleutians, boy, and I tell you, that's something else. If anybody wants to get up there at 40 below and 40, 50-foot waves and 100-mile-an-hour winds,
brr,
that's it. And then trying to do some battle with some enemy, that's it. Well, anyway, yeah, we ran out of food up there, and, we froze up in dry dock in Kodiak, and the Wasmuth took our place. That was another four-piper. Took our place to escort a ship up to the end of the Bering Sea. And going through Unimak Pass, her depth charges came off and blew her out of the water. Well, so we felt pretty good being in dry dock, frozen up. But anyway, we escorted all the ships and the landings. We were in landings up there, but we ran out of food. And so anyway, the Crown City, which was an army ship, supply ship, and it ran aground on one of the Pribilof Islands. So it was way up right above Nome, and we went up there to get some food. So we tried to anchor, and of course the captain says drop the anchor, and Hunter, he was the boat's mate, and he was letting the anchor go, and the captain says, how many fathoms? He says, oh, 6. How many? 12. How many? 13. How many? Endo, dropped the anchor and the chain. The whole thing went down to the bottom of the ocean up there in the Bering Sea. Well, anyway, we
and
got,
I'm sure it's still there.
Oh, it's still there. There's nobody going to pick it up. But anyway, then we went over and we got some food. So he said, okay, Johnny, that was one of the boat's mates. He says, you go over and get some food off of the Crown City. So anyway, he went over there and brought back. First thing he did was bring back a load of ice cream. Well, that was really unfortunate because the captain says, dang, go back. He said, I told you, food, food, food. Johnny said, what are you going to do with the ice cream? Well, bring it aboard. We'll eat it. Okay. So they sent him back over. So anyway, we got some supplies off of the Crown City. And we were up there 13 months, 14 months. We almost ran out of fuel. And
that's what everyone wanted in 40 below temperatures was ice cream.
Well, it wasn't all 40 below every day, but then that was It's pretty nice, and you can't believe it. It's bad, yes, when it's rough, but it's one of the most beautiful countries in the world, is that Alaska. Got to throw in a fishing trip once in a while, too. But anyway, during the war, it was really hectic, and we almost ran out of fuel, and they had a tanker up there, and we refueled off of that.
And you ended up on the Perry in 6 naval engagements, 11 landings that you were on the Perry for. But before it made it to Peleliu, you had a situation where you got a special visitor aboard the Perry. Tell me about that.
Oh, that was Anna Wetok. And one of the lieutenants came aboard the ship, and he looked me up. I was down in the fire room.
And he's a guy who, he knew you from Long Beach, right?
Yeah, he knew me, and he lived next door to my uncle down there. My uncle was in the Marine Corps. Not that he was out, but, well, he went back in. But then at that time, and they were building a house, and he lived next door to my uncle. So anyway, he came aboard the Perry, and, of course, he looked me up. And I was down there in the fire room, and we talked. Get talking, you know, and I, after discussing the family and everything, but I said, you know, this ship is going to go down. I just have a feeling. I've been on it now over 3.5 years. And I said, we've been in all of this battles and landings and stuff. And I said, this is one time I really feel this ship is going to go down. And anyway, right after that, why they came down and they said, come down and told me, he says, Fleshman, get your gear. You're going back to the States. I couldn't believe it, but I got my gear together, and at that time it was just wadded up in a pile and thrown in the boat. And that's the way we got off of that ship. 3 days later, the darn thing went up there to
Peleliu,
and it hit a mine, killed everybody in my section. My section was in the fire room at the time. And the thing blew the fire room and killed everybody there. And one of my replacements was Brand, and he took my place. And all the fellas in my section was killed in that mine. And, of course, the Perry went down. And, late, and what, 60-some years, I think, later, they found the Perry. And
some divers found it, actually, in the year 2000, and now on that wreckage, they have a plaque that honors the 8 men who died, and what the first name on that
Joseph Brand.
And he was the guy who took your spot on
that's
the
right, in my section. After being on there 3.5 years, it goes out and gets sunk after I got off of it.
When you heard about that, when you heard that it had sunk, what went through your mind?
Well, I was relieved that not that. I was sorry for those guys, but then I wasn't really unhappy that I was off of it.
And what about you, Dorothy? Tell me first when you got to see him again, because here you are married right before Pearl Harbor happens, and he's all over the world on this ship. You see him exactly 4 times in 4 years. Tell me about what it was like when he finally came back home.
Well, we were married 11 months and 11 days before I saw him after our quick wedding in Las Vegas. And at that time, my mother got us a wedding cake, and we had, the pastor came out, and we had open house on a Sunday afternoon and cut our wedding cake 11 months and 11 days later. In the 4.5 years, I saw Chuck 4 times. I realize that kids now have a hard go with their husbands and fathers and sons in Vietnam, but go back 2 generations, and we didn't have telephones and we didn't have email. When Chuck and I got married in Las Vegas, we sent a Western Union telegram home to our parents to tell them that we had gotten married, and I had no contact with him. We got these little letters, and they were all censored, and if any of the fellows wrote anything that they thought was any clue to where they might be or what they were doing, they just cut the piece out of the letter, so you would get it with little sections chopped out. And yes, it was a long time, but when Chuck got back in, I was waiting with our son, who was 5 months old, and his dad had never seen him in San Francisco. So.
What was that like for you, Chuck? when you saw your son for the very first time?
Well, I came back on the General Gordon. We came into San Francisco, and of course, like my enlistment was up, you got out with points. And I had so many points. I had a wife and a child, and my enlistment was up, and I didn't have any trouble having enough points to get out. But when we came back into San Francisco, they just threw us, they just sort of get off of the base until they could get our papers together. Well, they gave us a physical, and I went up to get out, get my discharge, and I had 102 temperature. Well, I didn't know it, but they said, well, you got to go to the hospital or get out. It's up to you. Either check it, whatever one. So I looked over there and heard Dorothy and my new baby son that I hadn't even seen. I wasn't going to the hospital, even with the temperature, and I figured, heck no, so I want out. Well, I got out. That was a mistake.
You were pretty sick, I take it.
Yeah, I had 102 temperature, but nobody knew what it was, and come to find out I had indolent fever and something else, I don't know. But anyway.
But you survived all that, too.
Oh, yeah.
When you look back now and you think about all these situations, the attacks on December 7th, the shells that were hitting your ship, the torpedo that somehow went underneath your ship and hit the Saratoga instead, getting off the Perry 3 days before it sinks and everyone in your section is killed, you feel like somebody was looking out for you?
Well, I know the Lord was looking after me. I tell you, you get out in something like that when the bullets are flying around, the shells are going, and you're laying in a ditch. I said, I never saw any atheist as long as I was in there when the battle was going on. And I know there on Saipan and Tinian, we were in there. Well, we went in there the first day. We started sweeping out to sweep into the beach because the ships can't come in there unless they're swept from the mines.
Got to clear all the mines.
Mines. And so we were sweeping, and then on the second day, then the battleships had come in and the cruisers, and then they would start lobbing them into the beach. But then on the other hand, the Japs were shooting from the beach back over to the big ships. And here we were sitting in there, and those shells were whopping through our rigging. And one was going, choo-choo-choo-choo, was the Japs, and womp, 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 the battleships were shooting back.
And you're in between the two of them.
And we're sitting there trying to sweep, and those darn shells going back and forth. Now, I tell you, life is good. And, we went through all of that. We went on 11 landings like this. What we did was sweep for mines, and all the landings that there in the Pacific that would go on. We didn't have any new ones. They were all old iron four-pipe destroyers. And that's all they had when the Navy first got them.
They had to make do with what they had.
They converted the Perry from 340 destroyer to a minesweeper, DMS-17. And when they did convert us, we went in Pearl Harbor, and they degaussed us, which is demagnetizing the ship, because they were all iron, and they attract mines.
Would not be good if you're a minesweeper.
No.
Well, I'm going to stop you there, because we have to get our last commercial break in here. But, Chuck, thank you so much for your service to our country, for sharing some of your stories with our TV audience in the past, and you will be able to see Chuck on Channel 47 tonight at 6 o'clock. And we'll talk more with the Lishmans and maybe a few of your phone calls. If you have a question for them or something you want to contribute to the program, at 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. We'll be right back with more Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Thank you for joining us on this first Sunday of December. We're with you every Sunday from 4 to 5 here on News Talk 580 KMJ. I hope my voice will be back for next week's program. I appreciate you sticking with me through this hour. It's been a pleasure visiting with Chuck and Dorothy Lishman, married 66 years now, because they ran off to Las Vegas in the amount of time Chuck had before he had to get back to the USS Perry, which he spent most of the duration of the war on. And Chuck, I was talking to you before we hit that break about the odds that you beat to be here today and all the close calls that you had. And it sounds like just being on a minesweeper, period, during World War II was a very dangerous position to be in.
I think there was 12, possibly 13 minesweepers, and every one of them was sunk. We got one ship, I think, that came back to the States was all that was left. No, it was bad duty. I tell you, I give all my prayers and thanks to the Lord. He's been with Dorothy and I. We've been together over 66 years, almost 66 and a half. And no, and we both love the Lord, so hey, I can't thank him enough for my life, for my family.
Well, he's clearly been good to you. Dorothy, let me ask you this. We talked to Chuck about when they found the Perry in 2000, 56 years after it sunk. Do you remember when the two of you found out about that and what that was like?
Yes, it was one of the fellows that was on the Perry, and there'd been divers looking for it, and Larry Tunks down, he's in Huntington Beach, and he was on it, and he remembered a little differently about where the ship went down. So he was talking to some friends, and three of them made up $1,000, and he flew down.
$10,000.
Okay, I'm sorry. He flew down there, and they hired a diver, a local diver, and Larry was telling him just about where he thought it was, and the divers were questioning because they'd looked for it for years, several expeditions, and the fellows went down and found it, and Larry was so excited. Of course, he couldn't dive to find the ship, but when they found it, he jumped in the water with them and was celebrating, and then the divers eventually made this plaque and threw a lay of flowers out and took the plaque down and planted it by the Perry. And actually, they can't go on it because of the bodies of the fellows that were never recovered.
It's never been decommissioned.
There's for some reason, the Navy won't let them go in.
What did that mean to you, though, Chuck, just to know that it had been found and that that plaque was placed there and that some honor was given to those men, one of whom could have been you had you not gotten off the ship 3 days earlier?
Well, I think there's a lot of people here that do the jobs out there that are not what you'd call heroes and decorated and everything else, but just think of all the people that's put their lives on those little ships that go out there and do the job, and they do the job that they're told to do and has to do, and that's what gets it done. They just don't fly over it and get a medal. They earn every one of the medals that they ever get. And those poor guys out here in the Veterans Hospital that are really hurting, man, they're the heroes of this of the forces in the United States.
Well, and you're a hero to me too, Chuck. So thank you for your service to our country. And I'm glad you mentioned the VA hospital again. Hopefully my voice will hold up to share this again. On Friday morning at 9:30, there will be a Pearl Harbor Day recognition at the VA Medical Center in Fresno. That's on Clinton and Fresno Streets. It's in the auditorium, which is just east of the main entrance. And there will be music. There will be a bell ringing, moments of silence for those who are no longer with us. And just a day to remember the sacrifices that were made. And again, the message that Chuck shared with us, that America needs to always be alert, to be prepared, that nothing like this ever happens again. Much like we saw on September 11th, a lot of Pearl Harbor veterans like Chuck were moved by that, and those are the kinds of things that they want to prevent by being prepared and remembering December 7th. So we hope that you'll do that. Hope that you'll watch Chuck's story on CBS 47 tonight at 6 o'clock. And if there's a veteran in your life who has not shared any of the experiences he had during the war, I hope you'll encourage him to do that before it's too late and to preserve this unique history here in our valley and across our great country. That's going to do it for Hometown Heroes this afternoon. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with another program next Sunday from 4 to 5 on News Talk 580 KMJ.